Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for an additional 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
Ground transportation is something we all deal with on a daily basis, whether it's in our cars, on a bus, or the subway. Navigating poor road conditions during inclement weather can be very treacherous, but new technologies and innovative thinking are working to keep people safe. Today, we're joined by Paul Paisano from the Road Weather Committee of the Transportation Research Board. Paul understands that ground transportation infrastructure is a vital asset that cannot be neglected. With extreme weather conditions becoming more prevalent, we must ensure that the meteorological and transportation communities are working together to pave the way for smarter, safer, and more sustainable methods of travel. Paul, thank you for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, here it comes. If you've listened to Weather Geeks or have sampled it at all, the first question out of the gate to every Weather Geeks guest is, how'd you get into weather? Was it an experience, something that happened as a kid, or something you happened upon later in life?
Yeah, at the risk of losing all credibility, I got into weather as an unplanned career move. I studied transportation engineering. My degrees are in civil engineering, and I started working in research at the Federal Highway Administration in the traffic safety research area doing crash analyses. And one day I came into the office and my boss said, oh, you're going to now work on rural intelligent transportation systems. And I said, okay. This was in the mid-90s when the whole idea of applying technology to the highway environment was brand new. And everybody was really excited about bringing cameras and variable message signs to the highways. And most of that work was being done in urban areas. And I got stuck, so to say, in the rural ITS area. And having then reached out to the state transportation professionals to talk about where there might be opportunities to bring transportation and technology into the rural environment, everybody kept coming back to the weather. The biggest challenge in rural areas at that time was how do we deal with and how do we use technology to address the weather challenges that we have in rural areas? So that was how I got into it. I never really thought much about it, to be perfectly honest, but it was a wonderful opportunity, and I was then able to build it out into a much broader program, certainly beyond just the rural environment.
And you heard Paul mention some of his background. So let me just give you some of his background. He has a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in civil engineering from the University of Maryland. He's the chair of the Road Weather Committee at the National Academy's Transportation Research Board, and he spent over 30 years at the Federal Highway Administration Road Weather Management Program. So we're talking to someone that I've been familiar with throughout my career in the meteorological circles and the American Meteorological Society and so forth. So it's by happenstance that we have you as a guest, because Paul and I are collaborating on something else later in the year, I guess next year. And so I just thought this would be an awesome topic for Weather Geeks. We've had the Federal Aviation Administration on, FAA, and I think people are more familiar with FAA than they may be with FHWA. So give our listeners a little sort of 101 on what the role of that agency is, because again, I think people fly and they hear FAA and so forth, and some may be familiar with FHWA, but others may not. So give us a little sort of primer on the agency.
Right. I'm glad you asked that, because there are certainly differences between how the FAA and FHWA work. Federal Highway Administration, their primary role is to execute the Federal Aid Highway Program. So I'm still sort of sometimes tend to put my
federal highway hat on. I do that with NASA all of the time.
The Federal Highway Administration does not own and operate any of the nation's highways. Even the interstate highway system is owned, managed, and maintained by the state departments of transportation. So at the Federal Highway Administration, their responsibilities are to provide the revenues from the federal gas tax to go back to the states as a portion by formula to help the states build, operate, their highway system. So where in the 60s and 70s, certainly the biggest emphasis was on building roads, over the more recent decades, the focus has been on, okay, how do we better operate and maintain what has been built? And so there's now a role as well in terms of how to better operate the system and where technology can come in. So there's a research component to the Federal Highway Administration. Some portion of the highway dollars are used for research. And that's where we would get into, when I was working there, we would get into programs to look at things like weather and what, and we would invest in the high-risk research programs that the state DOTs, Departments of Transportation, would not be able to afford to research, and explore new ways of doing things, how to, you know, do applied research to help the states and also cities, counties, local agencies better operate and maintain the system. So that's where the niche then was on what's the weather component to that is where I got involved.
And that's a great pivot to a geek out. Let's geek out for a second. This is weather geeks. Let's weather geek out. Okay. I mean, I think people intuitively, because we drive and know the challenges with weather, which it's raining here in the Atlanta area right now, and you know, that's obviously going to ramp up the hazard and traffic and accidents and so forth. But I want to march through some, just going to throw some weather terms out there and give us your sort of a reaction from a transportation perspective. So the first one is rain. What are the challenges there in diagnosing and predicting rain impacts on traffic and transportation?
Right. Certainly, rain is a good example of impacts, because you can actually have, anytime it rains, anytime there's any type of precipitation, it's going to slow traffic down. It's going to reduce friction on the pavement surface. So there's going to be a need, and as people, you know, people should slow down, but it does also mean it can result in higher congestion and more crashes, because people are maybe they're driving like they drive when everything is dry and clear, and not realizing that they need a little bit more distance between them and the vehicle in front of them, and you have more crashes when it rains. Again, in addition to the increase in congestion, because people just move more slowly.
What about just the extreme rainfall that leads to flooding? Are there challenges there to roadway infrastructure, bridges even? Well, not so much bridges, but I know sometimes when I'm traveling on the interstates and so forth, I mean, I'll even to myself say, boy, I bet this area floods when there's a lot of rain around. And I'll sometimes even see a little meteorological instrumentation on some bridge overpasses and so forth. So do you think a lot in your world about sort of the extreme rainfall aspects from a transportation standpoint?
Absolutely. And again, this gets back to needing to inform drivers about adverse weather conditions, and those extreme weather events and particularly the heavy rainfalls are a specific case where we need to let people know what's going on out there so they can take the appropriate action. And so the increase in precipitation or intensity of rain is going to cause more flooding events, and it's going to potentially lead to, you know, very high risk environments where people are maybe driving down roads where they shouldn't be. And the, of course, we have the Weather Service has great approach to things through their programs, like the turnaround don't drown message, which is a really nice way to stress the importance. But the problem with something as on that level is it's not specific to me when I'm going down this road or that road, and when I'm traveling. And so the need for timely, accurate, relevant, and actionable information about where those conditions occur on the highway are really what is most useful to help save lives.
Now, I want to talk about something that we personally experienced here in the Atlanta area right before I was going to preside over the AMS meeting in Atlanta in 2013 during my year as president. The snowpocalypse event, or whatever they were calling it here, which really wasn't a major snow event. It was 2 inches or so. But what happened in that event, we get snow obviously here in Atlanta, but we were in a situation where the temperatures were well below freezing that particular day. So things that were falling as snow was freezing immediately on the road. So what are the challenges and opportunities in terms of road conditions and transportation as it relates to freezing conditions? Because it's a large part of our country that deals with that. Here in the South, we occasionally do.
Right. And that's exactly highlights the difference between weather and road weather. You know, what's happening in the atmosphere may be completely different to what's happening on the road surface. And it creates, it's a whole different domain that needs new, different types of processes to understand how that weather is going to affect the roads. And so things like pavement temperature becomes one of the most critical, if not the most critical piece of information during the winter time to know whether that snow, when it hits the pavement, is it going to melt? Is it going to freeze? You know, or if you have a freezing rain event, is that liquid precipitation going to freeze as soon as it hits the roads? And that's where it creates this specific area within the weather community of that boundary layer. And I use boundary as the actual physical boundary between the surface and the air, not things that are kilometers above.
It's the first one in meteorology. The boundary layer, for the Weather Geeks listeners, is generally that first 0 to 1 kilometer layer of the atmosphere where the surface influences the atmosphere. But I know his use of boundary layer is a little bit different.
Right. So we're looking at what's happening on the ground. And again, what's happening, you know, whether the snow accumulates on the grass next to the pavement versus melting because the pavement happens to have been warmed by the sun that day, there's a difference there. And knowing how that's going to play out is extremely critical, so that particularly from the highway maintenance side, they know what actions to take. And the idea of not just waiting until that snow falls or the ice forms to then do something about it, but to be proactive is absolutely the way to go. And the states are doing great, and the maintenance community is doing a great job doing that because they have road weather information, because they have forecasts of not just of the atmosphere, but of the pavement surface. So they know 10, 12, 20 hours out, my pavement temperature is going to go below freezing. I need to apply chemicals to the road prior to this event so that we don't have these the accumulation and then the resulting crashes and such because of it.
And that was a big sort of solution or set after our Atlanta event. I know our state government and others really invested heavily in new systems to get at those. And I think you mentioned something that may be a little bit of a surprise to our listeners. You've mentioned the term road weather. And I'm certainly familiar with that, but it is kind of a sub-discipline. Talk about now in weather, we actually, part of what we do is we take observations and we do modeling in order to understand things. How do we get observations for road weather, and is there any modeling involved?
Yes, and yes. this was a solution that was learned in the 90s when some state DOT maintenance professionals went to Europe, particularly to Scandinavia, to see that they were putting weather sensors next to the roadway and into the roadway to measure pavement temperature and the conditions at and near the roadway surface, and they were able to use those observations to feed into models, particularly heat balance models that you can then use to predict how that pavement temperature is going to change over time. And again, that like you say, that's a sub-discipline within the weather world, and so there's the need for those observations, and getting back to your point about Georgia, the reason why the state may not have invested in them prior to it, because they're expensive. And like you say, you don't have a whole lot of these types of events in Georgia. So the DOT is pressed with a difficult decision. Do I invest a lot of money into this network of fixed sensors along the roadside and all of this equipment to maintain the road for events that may only happen 3 or 4 times a season? And the answer obviously is yes, you need to invest in these because you can't afford to have the snowpocalypse events and have the city shut down and lead to the not only the crashes, but the hazards and the danger that it puts people under if they're stranded on the roadway for hours at a time. So there's definitely, and there is a big network of sensors. And since the 90s, the state DOTs have invested in big network of sensors along the roadside to measure the road conditions. And it continues to advance, where originally it was pucks in the pavement, we would call it, which is the actual sensors embedded in the pavement. Now you can measure that through non-intrusive sensors on the roadside by pointing infrared beams down to the pavement to the pavement. You can measure temperature, and it's a lot easier to do that. And so there's a lot of technology out there, and it's being used by a number of agencies to. It started out as a source for winter maintenance decisions, but then we recognize over time that, hey, there's a wealth of information in these observations. How do we use it for other purposes as well?
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast, and I'm Dr. Marshall Shepherd from the University of Georgia, and I'm talking with Paul Pisano of the many forms. I'm going to talk about his previous career at Federal Highway, but I'm going to now lead into what he's currently up to. We're talking about navigating the challenges of weather and transportation. I know right now you're currently working with the Transportation Research Board. I'm certain that unless you're in our community or in your community, most people listening to Weather Geeks right now have no idea what that is. So give us a little 101 on that.
Right. So the Transportation Research Board, as you said, is part of the National Academies, and it's a huge group that is the leader across the board for transportation research. It brings together professionals across the transportation community, mostly engineers, but also certainly sociologists, psychologists, technology professionals, and looks at where do we need to be focusing our research efforts, again, across the full breadth of the transportation life cycle, from planning to design of the highways, construction of the highways, operating the what's been built, and maintaining what's been built. So there's a huge amount of research in all of those areas that goes on, and TRB, the Transportation Research Board, is the body that helps bring all of that together. I liken it to the American Meteorological Society, where AMS brings together public, private, academia to look at weather. TRB does the same to look at transportation, but more focusing specifically on the research side of it. And then there's other bodies that focus more on the they work on applying the research results as well, certainly, but other bodies are also looking at how to apply.
One question that comes to mind, and it kind of circles back to the previous conversation we had before the break. You were talking about road weather and sensors in roads, beside the roads, and modeling heat balance, our surface balance model, so forth. I recall a few guests that we've had on Weather Geeks in the past, actually from more of the private sector, were dealing more with sort of the other aspect of transportation roadway, which is that now cars have sensors in them. They have, you know, temperature sensors. They have things that can keep them on the roads and so forth. Does your board think about that aspect of the problem too, in terms of how information that may be in our cars or maybe in a truck fleet sensor system and others can be utilized, or are you primarily focused more on the infrastructure side?
Absolutely, looking at the vehicle side of it as well. And as we've talked about the use of technology, so much work had been going on putting the technology within the infrastructure. And at the same time, now we've seen the technology boom on the vehicle side of it. And we've always, since day one, we've looked at where the opportunities lie to utilize the data that these vehicles are collecting. We did some studies to assess that data, and we found, you know, certainly temperature is available. That's air temperature. It's not pavement temperature. And we learned that there tends to be a warm bias in the vehicle, as might be expected, but it varies from vehicle manufacturer to manufacturer. And so there's need to better understand, you know, what is that data telling us and how good is the data to be used for, to fill in the gap, certainly, because you'd have, you know, tens, maybe 100 kilometers between fixed sensors on the roadway. There's a lot of weather happening between those sensors. How can we use the vehicle to be that source of information between of what's happening? But there's a lot of great work. In fact, there's a company in Sweden that is has a software solution to use data off of the vehicle to determine pavement surface condition, so slickness. I mean, it's a surrogate for friction, which is a super critical piece of information from the highway community. What, you know, if you know what your friction is, that it tells you what actions you need to take to treat the road, but also whether the vehicles need to be slowing down and taking some specific action. And so there's a wealth of opportunity there. The challenge on the automated vehicle side of things, the connected vehicle, is that most of this work is happening strictly within the private sector. So there's less accessibility to that data to be able to look at it and play around with it. I know there's a lot of great work going on within the private sector to look at this, but it's not as readily available to the community at large. But we did work with a lot of state DOTs to put additional sensors on their fleets to measure pavement temperature, air temperature, visibility, those sorts of things. And we within the community are continuing to look at how to make use of that data to help in the decision support for those who operate and maintain, but then also those who use the system.
Now, I know our paths have recrossed because in early 2021, you're planning the, I guess, virtual conference of the TRB.
Right.
I know there are going to be various sessions and so forth. I'll be a part of one of them. What are your, first of all, is this a meeting you have every year? And I assume it is, since it's called the annual meeting. Mm-hmm. And then what are the goals, or what are you trying to achieve with that? Are you talking just to people within this community, or are you talking to stakeholders, policymakers? What are you up to with this virtual meeting?
Right. So the Transportation Research Board annual meeting is the transportation conference across the board. More than 10,000 people come together to hear presentations and meet through a very large committee structure to try to figure out what's going on where. And it was always the biggest challenge for the few of us who were in the road weather world. TRB week and AMS week would often overlap, and we always had that challenge of trying to decide, what are we going to go to TRB or are we going to go to AMS this year? But this within the road weather committee, we're sponsoring one of a lectern session, a panel discussion, to bring experts together to look at what's going on within the weather and climate research world that we on the transportation side may not even be aware of, and how do you convey that information to the transportation community so that we can figure out how to apply it to the transportation challenges. And so that's just one session within thousands that are going to be going on. And where it normally is a one-week conference, because it's gone virtual, this year it's going to be a month. They're holding various committee meetings in the first half of the month, and then technical sessions the second half of the month. So that gives people the opportunity to attend as many sessions as possible, which is good because there's always, you know, 50 concurrent activities, and you want to go to five of them, and you never can. So I think this is an opportunity, and it relates back to work that we did in the early 2000s, where we started this conversation between the weather and transportation communities that was there, but not to the level that it needed to be to really look at where the opportunities lie. And so Federal Highway invested in development of a maintenance decision support system and brought together five of the labs, national labs on the weather side that had been doing great work but wasn't getting applied to the highway world. So that's like NCAR, the National Severe Storms Lab, Oceanic and Atmospheric Research, all those bodies, MIT Lincoln Labs, the Army Corps of Engineers, their winter lab, brought all those people together to really think through how can we do great new research to affect the transportation world. And that's what we want to have that conversation again. We want to spark that conversation now, some 20 years later, to say, okay, what else has been going on? Because there's again so much great research going on in the weather and climate world that we don't know about on the transportation side. And I want to try to foster that conversation with you and others to figure out where we can build on some of these great achievements. And if I may add to, you had a guest on, Jamise Sims from NOAA spoke about the AI and where there's great work going on in that area. I think as well, if listening to that podcast, I'm thinking there's got to be some great road weather applications for AI. And yet I don't know that we've really invested in that. So that's what I want to try to have that, try to figure out where the opportunities lie to do more great road weather research.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
And we're back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard, and we're talking all about road weather opportunities and challenges with Paul Pisano. This last segment, Paul, I want to kind of pick your brain on a couple of different areas. One, I mean, and you kind of hinted at this in your previous answers, but I mean, you're really kind of at the forefront of this field. I mean, and you just mentioned AI, and shout out to Dr. Jamise Sims from NOAA, because I know she's doing quite a bit in that area at NOAA. And I agree. I think I wrote an article in Forbes, Paul, I guess about a year or so ago now, asking experts across the weather spectrum what are sort of the key opportunities that they see going forward in meteorology, and AI, machine learning just kept coming up. So I think it is going to cross into your world and others as well. But what are, talking specifically about weather, what are the key challenges that you see? The things that you need, that if you had an unlimited budget and know the technology's there, the know-how's there, I mean, what would be on your wish list sort of from a 0 to 5 year time frame to really get your community where it needs to be? I mean, what are some wish list items for your community?
Mm-hmm. I think that there's, again, a number of different things that could be pursued. One is just in the area of observations, better utilize and better understand how these mobile observations can be used to feed into these impact-based decision support systems. So I think there's a lot of work in that area that needs to take place.
Let me pause you for 1 second, because again, I know what you mean and you know what you mean, but there may be some listeners of Weather Geeks, because we have a very broad listener base, and shout out to all our listeners out there who are hanging in there with us as we get through COVID and have to tape this in our basement studios and so forth, and occasional audio glitches. So just thank you all for staying with us. But when you say a decision support system to the average person that may not be in our world, what is a decision support system?
Okay, good question. I'm thinking, again, what we've done on the winter maintenance side is that when we developed the maintenance decision support system, it says not only, it's a system that brings the weather forecasts and applies it to a decision tree from a winter maintenance manager's perspective. So I spoke earlier about pre-treating roads before a rain or snow event occurs to keep the ice from bonding to the pavement. In order to know when and where to apply that material, you need a forecast. And it's not just that it's going to snow, but again, as I mentioned earlier, you need to know, is that snow going to stick to the pavement? When is it going to happen? How long is it going to happen? When is it going to end? So that I know how much material I need to put down on which roads at what time. So it's turning weather information into a decision, a transportation related decision, treating when to treat the roads. But there's so much work, and that is a second area that I want to talk about, which is just the breadth of decision making that occurs, whether you're the winter maintenance manager, the traffic manager trying to provide appropriate traveler information to the traveling community, to road users about when and where to travel. It's the travelers themselves, like as we discussed earlier, knowing whether or not they should be driving down a road that may be flooded. It's the need for turning weather information into a transportation-based decision. Yeah. And there's still so much more work that we can be doing in this area for all the different types of decision makers that are out there.
One thing that as I've listened to you talking, you were talking about AI, some of my own personal research in my research group at the University of Georgia is in urban weather and climate. And we've been exploring things like using people's cell phones and information to kind of get dense information on, I guess what you would call crowdsourcing. Are those kinds of areas things that could be of value? I mean, people have, again, you talked about that there's potential information from cars and so forth, but I'm thinking about potential crowdsourcing applications and information. The MPing is something that the National Weather Service, NOAA, uses, where people sort of record on that app. And by the way, if you don't have MPing, go download MPing. I think it's MPing. It's an app that you can download, and you can report drizzle conditions or rain conditions or hail. I use it on my phone as well. Are you all using or thinking about using things like crowdsourcing and those types of things?
Yes, and that data is certainly being used just to monitor traffic flow at all, but it also is being used within the weather, the road weather world as well. But this gets back to one of the things that we were alluding to when we talked about FAA versus federal highway, and I spoke about how there is no federal operational authority for the road weather world. So you end up with a very distributed network of private sector and public sector services, that's the way the world is, and so we just deal with it. But it creates a lot of challenges, because there could be a great opportunity to be doing this crowdsourcing and pulling these observations off of phones or vehicles. But where that data goes, how it gets utilized, how it gets ultimately turned into a decision, some type of decision support, and gets disseminated to the public, there is no aviation weather program. There's no single authority that's going to take that in and do that work. So you end up having a very distributed system out there, and potentially disconnected system. And so there are things happening, but it's not uniform, and it can create some information consistency problems as well, because you're getting a lot of different information from a lot of different sources that may be inconsistent and conflicting.
That was actually interesting, because I wanted to kind of go there with the next question, but you kind of led me into it. This was something I've noticed during the COVID and coronavirus challenge that we've dealt with as well. You had all these groups, different groups with their models of COVID-19 and virus spread and, you know, peak times for hospital beds and so forth. But everyone had their own approaches. Whereas in the weather world, we have a National Center for Environmental Prediction. And so there's sort of a corralling of all of this information in the same sense. So it sounds like you're dealing with a very similar issue in that there's a lot of things going on, but there's no sort of endpoint that then can kind of synthesize this information, the useful information. So perhaps this is something that I'm sure will be a discussion point going forth in your conference and your meeting in January, but going ongoing as well. As we draw to a close here, how is your community thinking about or concerned with or dealing with the specter and here and now problem of climate change?
Right. So that's certainly something that we are well aware of. And like you say, to the extent that that leads to more extreme weather events, we need to have the built-in resiliency into our world and think about not only how to deal with the types of events that we're familiar with, but the beyond, you know, the more the heavier snowfall events, the more frequent events, how do we, or the fact that instead of snow it might be an icing event because of the way there's some warming going on in the different atmospheric layers. So there's certainly awareness within the operations and maintenance side of the transportation world. I know there's a lot of work going on in the planning and design side of with regards to climate. The biggest challenge there up until fairly recently has been the uncertainty surrounding the climate models. I mean, there was so much uncertainty that it was really difficult to then make transportation decisions, because you'd look at some of the model output and it would say, well, it's probably going to be warmer here, but it might be colder. It's like, okay, wait, what is the answer there? What do I do about that? And now that, as we're seeing the regional climate models get better and downscaling happening, that's going to bring in more confidence into what's going to be happening on the climate side to help us figure out, okay, what does that mean? What do we need to be doing on the transportation side then?
Yeah, and we just mentioned downscaling. This is something I deal with quite a bit. For the viewers that aren't familiar with that term, a climate model operates on much larger scales. So if you think about the pixels in your cell phone, there are these little megapixels that make up your picture. And the more pixels you have on your phone, the more detailed the picture is because it's smaller. So you sort of take that to the modeling world. The footprint of a particular pixel of a climate model, if you will, may be the size of an entire quarter of a state. And so you get a blob that's representing temperature and rainfall in the model over North Georgia. How do you make a decision for a census block in Atlanta? Because they're mismatched resolution-wise. So we have these ways of downscaling the information from those larger scales to the smaller scales using statistical techniques, dynamical modeling, and so forth. So that has always been one of the particular challenges with making climate model information useful for people like Paul, who want to make decisions on the scale of a city or a network of roads and so forth. So that's a big challenge. So I really appreciate that you brought that up in your remarks. Paul, where can people find out more about what you and your organization are up to? Are you personally, are you on Twitter, social media, websites?
I am on Twitter as at Pipizzano, although I actually don't do a whole lot of tweeting about road weather. I should. I don't have as good an answer for that as I should. We do have there's a website for the Road Weather Committee, and I can at TRB, and I can.
No, we can do that. Yeah, so it's the Road Weather Committee, and it's TRB. Google that if you can, and find that. And I'll come back to you, because I am going to now do something we always do, and maybe you'll have it by the time I'm done with this. It's the time for our geek of the week. We like to highlight a scientist superstar, a great geologist, or a weather weenie at the end of every podcast. This episode's Geek of the Week is Robert Olivares. Rob is from Glendale, California, and is a utility engineer and an official weather guy for his department there. Even though the Los Angeles metro area doesn't see many storms outside of the wet season, Rob is a proud storm spotter for the National Weather Service. When storms actually do roll through Southern California, they are really quite spectacular. if you or someone you know should be the next Geek of the Week or Weather Geek of the Week, as we like to say, feel free to check out our social media pages. Any final parting shots or words you'd like to say, Paul?
Just thank you very much for this opportunity. It's great. I was thinking, I have my list of all things I want to talk about. I feel like we only scratched the surface because I think there's so much more that we could have discussed. But this was great, and I really appreciate the opportunity to get the road weather word out there.
Yeah, and you know, whenever I hear a guest say that, that just means a part two of the podcast episode. So note to self and to producers. Thank you so much for joining us, Paul, on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepherd from the University of Georgia. And we'll see you.